Questions.
Well, welcome. This is Take 3. John Kay in Banbury goes first. Hi, Rosie and Jim. A quick question from a medium-term listener, third-time emailer, and winner of a Rupert the Bear picnic set in a colouring competition when I was six. I just love Rupert the Bear.
Yeah.
I've just read a lengthy article in Vulture.com on how film PR companies have been manipulating the scores on a very well-known and influential movie rating website.
Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, I'm shocked.
Could be a fruit.
I'm shocked.
Could be a vegetable. Who knows? So my question is, should aggregated rankings be banned?
You can't ban them because it's like, but what you can do is exactly what I've been saying for years and years, which is you can just ignore them because they're rubbish. Aggregate, you know, aggregators became this industry thing, which is they created a stick with which to beat themselves. If you have a film that divides an audience in that some people think it's the greatest movie ever made, 5 stars, and some people think it's the worst movie ever made, 1 star, the aggregate is, it's all right. Star systems anyway are rubbish. Every now and then you dip your toe into the murky waters of Rotten Tomatoes and they've taken reviews that I've done and they've said, oh, this is fresh or this is... That's not what the review said. It's imbecilic. It's no surprise that it's being used to game the industry because obviously this is what, you know, if you create something that has the power of Rotten Tomatoes, it is there to be gamed. It's like Amazon reviews, you know, that this is what happens. Don't be surprised. And no, you can't ban them. But what you can do is you can just say, for heaven's sake, just ignore them. They're just lowest common denominator nonsense and it's all traffic driven and it's a real shame. And yeah.
So banning them isn't the answer, just don't look at them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can't ban them. It's you just can't, but what you can do is every time somebody mentions them, you can roll your eyes to the heavens and go, well, you know, if you are seriously looking to Rotten Tomatoes to tell you whether a film is good or bad, you need to get out more.
Mm-hmm. Poppy in Brooklyn.
But thank you for the email. I'm not saying that to you. I mean, it's an interesting question, and I know exactly the piece that you're referring to, and you're quite right. But it's just that you can't ban it, you know.
Thank you, John. Poppy in Brooklyn is next. An interesting example of a brief question which could fill an entire dinner party or just evening in the pub full of intelligent and interesting conversation.
Okay.
Poppy's question. What do a lot of parents do that unknowingly negatively affects their children? So there are key things in this thing. First of all, Poppy's not asking us personally about things that we might have done that's negatively affected
the
children.
How long have you got?
So what do a lot of parents, so this is just not, it's not an individual thing. So what do a lot of parents do that unknowingly negatively affects their children? So presumably we take out smoking or drinking too much or something like that, because you would probably know that what you're doing might be negatively affecting someone's health. So I've been thinking about this for a few hours since I read Poppy's question. A lot of parents do that unknowingly negatively affects their children. The closest that I came to any kind of answer was, these are all going to be behavioral, really, I think, about the way that you are.
Okay, and this relates back to what Brian Cox was saying in the opening of Succession, that people are created by the environment in which they're raised.
Yeah. So I would think, for example, there'll be a neat way of expressing this, which I will struggle to get to, but disrespect was the word that I wrote down on the script. So that if you are like a casual misogynist, if you talk down to women or any group of people, really, your kids may well pick up on that and it may well affect them adversely. Stupid example. There is a whimsical song. I think it's whimsical, which is, you know, about, I know you don't know about sport, but there's a rivalry between Tottenham and Arsenal, right? It's a geographic location thing. And Arsenal fans sing, probably if they're bored, "Stand up if you hate Tottenham," right? And some,
but they do it
up
in a way that doesn't quite scan, but also
conversely, Tottenham fans do the same. Stand up if you hate Arsenal. And whenever that happened, and I was at a match with one of the, I always said, "We don't do that. Don't do that because
you don't hate them."
Well, also, I mean, it doesn't mean that if someone stands that they actually are filled with that either. I just thought this is taking right. It's just uses language that is unnecessary. So I guess what I'm saying is, is one of the things that Poppy is getting at. Things that parents do unknowingly negatively affects their children. It'll be in the way that you talk to your children, or the way you talk to your partner, or the way you talk to your parents, or the way that you talk to your neighbors, or something like that. I don't know if this is even half an answer, but I'm edging towards that kind of thing.
Yes. This is hard to answer because what you, and partly because when you said, what do a lot of parents do? And of course, the immediate thing you do is, well, the immediate thing I do, because I make everything about me, is make everything about me and think, what do I do?
Which it is clearly not saying.
No,
it is, you can answer it like that.
It is clearly not saying it. But when you were saying, for example, if you disrespect women, you pass on, you know, and I know that from my own personal experience of you, that that is something which hasn't happened in your household. And as a result of it, I believe that your children have been raised in an environment in which they are, respectful to either or any. Fine. So the only thing I can think of immediately, quite outside of sort of, personal things about, shouting and all that sort of stuff is not a good environment for anybody at all. And of course, as everybody knows, when you're a parent, you're completely frazzled. And, it's one of the weird things about nature is that it asks you to do the most complicated thing when you are at your least able to even stay awake. So I think, I think there are things like, the respect thing is absolutely right. Kids learn from example. So, politeness and respect and, being open-minded is a good thing. But I also think that you can do things like, and I would be guilty of this, you can worry in a way that normalizes what, my whole life I've struggled with anxiety and worry, and I've only in the fairly recent past actually done something about it. I wish I'd done something about it earlier on. I wish I had been a less frantically anxious and worried person earlier on in my life, because I know that, my children probably would have benefited from having a less frantically anxious one. I never thought, I always thought I don't want to go to a therapist because I think it's an indulgence. I think it's an indulgence to spend an hour a week talking about me, when in fact, I think it's probably better for everybody else. And the other thing is to do with, it's to do with listening to kids. Kids will tell you what they're interested in. Whether or not you pick up on it is a different thing. And I think quite often it's possible to, and I'm not saying I'm not guilty of this, it is possible to impose your own ambitions on your children.
Okay, that ambition is quite an interesting one, yeah.
That there are things that you want or wish for your life, and you project them onto your children, and they may not be the things that your children want or are interested in, and in fact, they're telling you that there's something else in their life. And I think that it's done out of love because, you want the best for your children, and therefore you imagine that what you would feel is the best for you would be the best for them, and it may well not be.
Yeah.
So I would say that that's probably something that a lot of people do, and I'm sure that I have been guilty of it as well, which is projecting your own ambitions onto your children in the belief that it's good for them, but in fact it's not.
There's a very long answer for...
Did that make sense?
Yes, it does. And also that goes into the whole area of bringing your children up in a particular religion, because there would be ways of doing that which would be harmful to your children, and there would be ways in which it would be a blessing for your children anyway.
Yeah.
So the respect the women in the house thing is, there was a parenting guy who was around a lot back when I was listening to this kind of stuff called Steve Biddulph. And he'd written a book, I think, called Bringing Up Boys. And as I was bringing up a boy, just one at the time, and on the first page of this book, it said, remember this. If you remember nothing else from this book, remember the easier day is never coming. And his whole thing was, there is no such thing as quality time. There's only quantity.
Time.
Yeah, you don't get the quality time unless you put in the quantity. And that whole thing is a myth. And then one of his things was respect the women in the house, whether it be the sisters or the grandmothers or the mother. And you think, okay, fine. Yeah, that's pretty good. So, Poppy, that's a very long answer. And it'd be interesting to know what other people think about it.
Yes, I would like to know what
unknowingly
other people
think. Negatively affecting children.
Yeah.
Correspondence@codemare.com. Okay, Lane in Aberdeen. Neither of you seem to mention going abroad on holiday very much. And no, I'm not talking about working visits to film festivals or Scandinavian short breaks to see grandchildren. Don't you like abroad? And then I think Lane kind of throws it away by saying, what made you so xenophobic? Which is kind of a bit daft, really, because you've just come back from traveling the globe.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was a big thing, partly because it's the first time in a long time that I've gone, that I have, it wasn't a film festival, it wasn't a conference, it was just a holiday. It was just, you know, we saved up and splashed out on a holiday that was nothing other than, and it was, and we went with the children and well, now the adults, and it was fabulous.
And also, if going to Denmark is what you spend a lot of time doing because of family things, then that kind of takes out an awful lot of the rest of the holiday time, really. So that is because, and also I think COVID made foreign travel difficult and very made difficult. People very nervous about it. And staying in the UK is actually fantastic.
Yeah.
You
know?
So you don't need to go abroad. So
you can go abroad in the UK. You can go to Cornwall.
Well, that is a controversial statement. I told you about the opening of the first or second Itch book is the most controversial line that I appear to have written. Because it says, it just, in italics, it goes, Cornwall, England.
England. and immediately.
Yeah, because clearly that is geographically true. But there are some nationalists who would like to argue the case. So this is from Charles in Manchester. For Mark, I don't take exception to being exclusive. As a lifelong David Lynch fan, it's great to hear Mark's frequent reverence for the brilliance that is Twin Peaks' Fire Walk With Me. Mm-hmm. I wondered if he was a fan of the original series, including the relatively all-over-the-place second season, and if what his thoughts are on the marvelous Twin Peaks' The Return. P.S., a few years ago, I was on holiday in Cornwall and popped into the HMV in Truro to pick up a copy of Raw on Mark's recommendation.
Yeah.
I walk out of the store to see none other than the good doctor himself standing just a few feet away. I was tempted to go over and thank him, albeit prematurely, for the recommendation, but decided to leave him in peace. I ended up loving the film and even more so her follow-up, Titan. Sex with a car? What are you having sex with a car for? And I've regretted not passing on my regards ever since. So Charles is now passing on his regards.
Thank you.
But the question is your thoughts on the original series and the all-over-the-place second season.
Well, this is weird. As we've just discussed, I have just finished rewatching the whole of the first series of Twin Peaks. And I'm now into the second season. And the second season is all over the place, but it's also interestingly all over the place. And then Fire Walk With Me. And then Twin Peaks The Return, which when it came out was hailed by Sight and Sound magazine as the best film of the year, despite the fact that it is a TV series and prompted a very interesting debate about what, you know, what the difference between film and TV is. I mean, I think the remarkable thing about Twin Peaks is that in all its different incarnations, it is pretty wonderful. And it is absolutely true that series two, you know, is all over the shop, but also in its all over the shopness, it has some of the most marvelous things in it. I remember David Lynch saying about when they were doing Fire Walk With Me that one of the reasons was he just wanted to be back in Twin Peaks. He loved the world of it and the sound of Bad Lamenti and the characters. There's just something about it. The Return is really far out. I mean, like properly far out, and is tonally kind of quite different to, I mean, series one and series two are tonally similar, if shambolic. The film is like because the film actually begins with a television set being smashed, which Nigel Floyd, my very good friend, had always taken as symbolic of, right, we've gone beyond the confines of television. Now we can get into all the really dark underbelly stuff. By the time you get to The Return, television has changed so much that television is as able to go to those dark, strange places as cinema ever was. So there is a really fascinating thing that Twin Peaks... I mean, I remember being at Time Out when the Twin Peaks pilot...
Time Out, a listings magazine
in
London.
Yeah, in the 80s. Or, no, it must be in the 90s. Well, I went to Time Out in the 80s, but it must have happened in the 90s. When the video came in of the pilot of Twin Peaks, which then they'd stuck the end on. There's the kind of weird... There's a version of Twin Peaks, which is like 89 minutes long, that they just shot an ending so that they could put it out on video. That was, I think, the first time I ever came across Twin Peaks. And yeah, no, I love it all. I seem to remember that Jonathan Ross did an interview with David Lynch that was broadcast when they first started broadcasting Twin Peaks. And of course, it was very tied up with, Linda and my relationship, because we watched it together and, you know, and then drove around America listening to the soundtrack. It's great. You love Twin Peaks?
I think I watched it a few times. You know, so don't rope me in.
Okay.
Now, sometimes questions get read out because they're great, because they're short, they're pithy, thinking this is good, this will start a good conversation. And sometimes I do it because I feel threatened by the way it's been signed.
Okay.
So this question, so let's be very careful how we answer it, is signed Andy the Armed Scouse Copper in London. So he's nearby, and he's an armed Scouse Copper. Dear Mary and Simone, being a fan from the very start of you both, your podcast
I'm relieved already.
Is a big talking point every day at the station.
Wow.
I don't believe that to be true, Andy. But anyway, that would be very nice if this podcast is a big talking point at your police station. And it keeps what is usually a hectic day a little lighter. Thank you both. I was wondering if Mark had an opinion on a particular favourite film of mine, a remake of a French film, which I looked this up. I had completely forgotten about it. Okay, remake of a French film starring Donald Sutherland and Larry Mullen Jr., U2's drummer. Brackets, sorry, Mark, I'm a huge tattooed U2 fan.
Okay, fine.
Again, warning.
Yes.
It's called The Man on the Train. I've never seen the original, so I was wondering what you thought. Love you both. Love you too, Andy, the Armed Scouse Copper. Thanks again.
I don't have any memory of this at all.
The Man on the Train, and I looked it up on the IMDb, and it indeed stars Donald Sutherland and Larry Mullen Jr., who appears to be...
Okay, well, hang on. There's a 2002 film, which is the Jean Rochefort film, which is the French film that it's based on, right?
Well, this is it
must have come after that. Yes. So he said it's a remake of the French film, okay?
Yes.
So the French film is a Patrice Lecomte film from 2002. So if I now go on to Connections...
The answer, Andy, is clearly no.
No, I know, but I'm just fascinated that Larry Mullen... So Connections, remade as Man on the Train from 2011. So this is the one that you found, starring Donald Sutherland... And Larry Mullen Jr.?
Yes.
Is that Larry Mullen?
That's Larry Mullen Jr. out of U2.
Directed by Mary McCookin. I do not believe that I have seen this. A mysterious stranger rolls into a small town on the train planning to knock off a bank. It will go off without a hitch when he encounters a retired poetry professor.
Guess which. I invite the listener to guess which one is playing the criminal and which one is playing the professor.
His plans take an unlikely turn. Since the hotel is closed and he can find no other place to stay, the professor generously welcomes him into his home. As the two men talk over the passing days, a bond forms between these polar opposites and unexpected moments of humour and compassion emerge. As they begin to understand each other, they reflect on the choices they've made in their lives, secretly longing to live the type of lifestyle the other man has
lived. So it's a film that came out in the last 10 years and... I have no knowledge about it at all.
No,
but with Donald Sutherland and Larry Mullen Jr., you'd think, okay, I'll watch that and see. That sounds
interesting. I'm just going to do the thing which I usually do, which is just to make sure I didn't review it. So I'm going to just Google Man on the Train and then
look something up.
My own name and just see, because, this is like when I discovered that I actually had seen Man on the Train. Have I reviewed it?
Girl on the phone keeps ringing back.
She's telling me this and she's telling me that.
Yeah. But I don't know about the man.
And that's got a rude word in it, that song. No, I do not believe that I have reviewed it.
In which case, it didn't get much of a distribution.
Wow.
Which is astonishing, considering who's in it.
Yeah, wow.
Anyway, okay. Well, thank you very much, Andy the Armed Scouse Copper. I hope we haven't disappointed you too much that you feel as though you might need to pop round.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Two more questions and then we're done. Send in your questions, by the way, and your thoughts on our answers, correspondence@kermanandmayo.com. Shalima in Austin, what's something you were told you would grow out of but never did?
Pop music, films. I mean, absolutely. Pop music.
I think that is the answer.
The desire to be in a band. And watching all those films. The two pieces of advice my now sadly missed father gave me were stop watching all those movies and learn to speak properly.
And you haven't done either.
No, I said, considering that I ended up being somebody who spoke on the radio for a living about watching all those movies, I must have been a great disappointment.
Yeah, it must have been. But yes, I think pop music has to be.
Or in your case, particularly.
Yeah, well, as I've said before, when it was announced that radio, the light programme, the third programme and the home service would be become Radio 1, 2, 3 and 4, and Radio 1 would just play pop music, he said, I'm not having that on in this house.
Is that right?
Yeah, he did. So I missed, again, very obviously.
He changed
his mind.
He changed his mind when it's like, I mean, my father was the same, was that as I made a living out of it, he went, oh, okay, wow.
I think they thought of it as an either or. You either like pop music or you like light classical music, or you either like David Bowie or you like Gilbert and Sullivan. And what happens is, as you get older, you go, I like all of these things. I can see merit in all of this.
And you discover that David Bowie liked Gilbert O'Sullivan. Yeah. Gilbert and Sullivan. Or Gilbert O'Sullivan.
He probably did a song. He probably starred in The Man on the Train. Gilbert O'Sullivan is the professor, David Bowie is the thug. That's what happened there.
Yeah.
Final question, which comes from Ben Tapp, who is in Brighton. It's a long preamble here, Ben. But anyway, the question is a slight variation on stopping movies at a certain point before the end. Do you have a movie where you would have preferred it to start at a different point? So it's not walking out at a particular point. You wish that, can we get rid of all of that stuff at the beginning? You want it to start at a different point. My example, he says, is Mr. Blinky Richard Gere in The Mothman Prophecies from 2002.
Okay.
I maintain from the first time I saw it at the cinema that it should have started with the car breakdown and knocking on Will Patton's character's front door and the ensuing confrontation. I think it would have given the movie a better hook right from the off. Anyway, that's... And he says, oh, there you go. I've seen it a few times, and it is, to use one of Simon's least favourite phrases, a guilty pleasure of mine. If it's a pleasure, it's a pleasure. The bridge sequence at the end is very well done, in my opinion. I can't think of...
I remember The Mothman Prophecy, but I don't
remember. Is there a movie that you thought we could have lost the entire opening sequence and began now?
I mean, I struggle to think of one. I really do struggle to think of one.
Okay, well, there's the answer.
It's, I mean, weirdly enough, Fire Walk With Me, because it has all the stuff before... And then it gets to the point when it goes, this is going to happen again in a different place, different time. And then you get bum, bum. And then the Laura Palmer story starts. And I remember somebody who I know likes that film saying it should have started there. To which my answer was, no, it has to have the other thing beforehand because the whole point about Twin Peaks is it's to do with repetition and ritual. So
anyway, correspondence at kerbinomeo.com. Thank you very much indeed for the questions that you sent in. If you disagree or would like to chip in on some of our chippy answers, then by all means get in touch. And there'll be a new take one and a new take two with you in a couple of days.
Lovely.